Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Granth Raj Shrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 22 and 23, because 22 has a very short purport. But we can read this one together, and then I'll read 23 by myself. Yeah. Okay. Atate Bhagava Lila Yoga Mayoru Brimitaha Vishvastityud Bhavantarta Varnayam Yanu Purvashaha Tate Bhagava Lila Yoga Mayoru Brimitaha Vishvastityu Bhavantarta Varnayam Yanu Purvashaha. Please chant. Matajis.
Matajis.
Okay. So, word for word translation. Ata, therefore, te, unto you, Bhagavat, pertaining to the personality of Godhead. Lilaha, pastimes. Yogamaya, energy of the Lord. Uru, greatly. Primitaha, extended by. Vishva, of the cosmic world. Stiti, maintenance. Udbhava, creation. Anta, dissolution. Artaha, purpose. Varnayami, I shall describe. Anupurvashaha, systematically. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I shall therefore describe to you the pastimes by which the personality of Godhead extends His transcendental potency for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic world as they occur one after another. Purport. The omnipotent Lord, by His different energies, can perform anything and everything He likes. The creation of the cosmic world is done by His Yogamaya energy. So next verse, I'll just read this alone. Bhagavan eka asetam agra atmananam vibhu atme chanu katavatma nana matyupalakshanaha. The personality of Godhead, the master of all living entities, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. It is by His will only that creation is made possible, and again, everything merges in Him. This Supreme Self is symptomized by different names. Purport. The great sage here begins to explain the purpose of the four original verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This isn't the four first verses of the first canto. This is referring to the Chatur Shloki in Bhagavatam in Canto 2, Chapter 9. Although they have no access to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the followers of the Mayavad impersonalist school sometimes screw out an imaginary explanation of the original four verses, but we must accept the actual explanation given herein by Maitreya Muni, because he, along with Uddhava, personally heard it directly from the Lord. The first line of the original four verses runs Aham Evasam Eva Agre. The word Aham is misinterpreted by the Mayavad school into meanings which no one but the interpreter can understand. Here Aham is explained as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not the individual living entities. Before the creation, there was only the personality of Godhead. There were no Purusha incarnations, and certainly no living entities by which the manifested creation is affected. The Purusha... Okay, sorry. Before the creation, there was only the personality of Godhead. There were no Purusha incarnations, and certainly no living entities, nor was there the material energy by which the manifested creation is affected. Sorry. The Purusha incarnations and all the different energies of the Supreme Lord were merged in him only. The personality of Godhead is described herein as the master of all other living entities. He is like the sun disk, and the living entities are like the molecules of the sun's rays. This existence of the Lord before the creation is confirmed by the Shrutis. Vasudevo vaidam agra asit na brahma na cha shankaraha eko vai naranam asin na brahma neshanaha. Because everything that be is an emanation from the personality of Godhead, He always exists alone without a second. He can so exist because He is all perfect and omnipotent. Everything other than Him, including His plenary expansions, the Vishnu Tattvas, is his part and parcel. Before the creation, there was no Karanarnavashayi or Garbhadakshayi or Shirodakshayi Vishnus, nor was there Brahma or Shankar. The Vishnu plenary expansion and the living entities, beginning from Brahma, are separated parts and parcels. Although the spiritual existence was there with the Lord, the material existence was dormant in him. By his will only is the material manifestation done and undone. The diversity of the Vaikuntha Loka is one with the Lord, just as the diversity of soldiers is one with and the same as the king. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.7, the material creation takes place at intervals by the will of the Lord, and in the periods between dissolution and creation, the living entities and the material energy remain dormant in him. Om Gyanatimandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So as I was reading this, I actually had a couple questions that I don't even have answers to. This seems like a reoccurring phenomenon in my life. As I attempt to read scrutinizingly books of Srila Prabhupada, it seems like I have more questions than answers. Like, for example, before the creation, there was no Karnodakshaya Vishnu. So my previous understanding before I read this verse and this purport was the material world is eternal in the sense that it takes place in intervals, and Karnodakshaya Vishnu is laying on the Karna ocean, and he's breathing out unlimited number of universes, and then when it's time for the universes to become dissolved or destroyed, they go back into the body of Karnodakshaya Vishnu. But my understanding was that Karnodakshaya Vishnu was eternal. He's an expansion from Krishna, but it's saying here that before the creation, there was no Karnodakshaya Vishnu, so I'm not too sure about that. But I do know that on a number of occasions, devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada very detailed questions about the spiritual world, and he had a simple answer. You go there and you find out yourself. Like on one occasion, one devotee, he asked Srila Prabhupada, "You're saying everything in the spiritual world is a person?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." "So that means a rasgula is a person?" "Yes." "So what does it feel like when a rasgula gets eaten by Krishna? You know, what happens to that living entity?" And that was Srila Prabhupada's reply. "You have to go there to find out yourself." So, this purport, it just goes to show that everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. Even the Vishnu tattvas are his different expansions. The material energy is his expansion. The jivas are expansion. So in one sense, everything is Krishna. And when we go out and we try to give Krishna consciousness to others, we're parts of Krishna, trying to give Krishna to other parts of Krishna to please Krishna, to get them out of Krishna's material energy and get them back into Krishna's internal energy. So everything is is Krishna. Bhagavad Gita in chapter 5, that explains the vision of a wise sage that all living entities, whether they're an elephant or an ant or a human, they all have a soul, they all have the super soul within them. And they are a soul, they don't have a soul, okay. And this understanding, this knowledge is actually very liberating because there's no anxiety. You know, if everything is Krishna, even death is Krishna, that's what people fear the most, is death. So it's like Krishna just coming and and taking you somewhere else. So if everything is Krishna, this the whole world is fully Krishna conscious, and the fact that I am not able to understand that or fully realize that, that means that I'm in Maya. It's not that this material world is Maya, it's Krishna's energy, but because I'm in Maya, I'm not able to see that. And in the Bhagavatam, the first canto, this is describing the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's the highest truth distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is opening our eyes to the reality and is dissipating the illusion that covers us from seeing that reality that's right in front of us. And so this is the significance of understanding the different Purusha avatars and different material elements. Sometimes, at least for myself, as I'm reading through the Bhagavatam, I'm wondering what's the need of all this like detailed knowledge about like the material universe and everything like that. But actually it's specifically set up so that we become detached from the material world. We start to see it for what it really is. And in Ishopanishad, it says that one should learn nescience and spiritual knowledge at the same time. I've heard devotees quote it like this, and this is not what it means, at least according to my realization. That does not mean that you have to engage in material activities and spiritual activities side by side, but rather we should understand the material world and simultaneously cultivate spiritual knowledge about the spiritual world. So in the previous verse, the one that we read together, verse 22, Maitreya Muni says, Bhagavat Lila Yoga Maya, that this material world is actually a pastime of Krishna. And it exists primarily to facilitate the living entities from going back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada often says in his purports that this is Krishna's mercy, that Krishna is giving this world as his mercy to facilitate us going back to Godhead. But one may question, well, how is it Krishna's mercy that he created a material world in the first place? So if the jivas are falling from the spirit, if we came from the spiritual world, we don't want to associate with Krishna anymore, he could just vanquish our existence. You know, instead of falling down, okay, you don't want to be here, then don't exist. But rather he's giving us like a prison house for reformation, reforming our behavior. So in that sense, it's actually Krishna's mercy. Another reason, Prabhupada explains, that the material world exists is simultaneously to give the living entities a chance to express their free will, to try to enjoy. But like I was saying earlier, everything is Krishna's energy. So even the conditioned souls that are trying to enjoy, anything that anybody is attracted to anywhere in the material atmosphere is because it's Krishna's energy. We're actually attracted to Krishna. The soul wants Krishna, is thirsty for love of Krishna, but we're replacing our love for Krishna we're dovetailing our love for Krishna into the material energy. And we replace Krishna with a girlfriend or boyfriend or drugs and music and everything like that. But so after many lifetimes of this, of trying to replace Krishna with Krishna's energy, external energy, an intelligent soul, after suffering and being kicked around by Maya, takes up some sort of path of self-realization to gradually get out of material existence. But even on the path of self-realization, what do we use to get free from material existence? Those very material elements that we previously used to enjoy, we use to actually get free from material existence altogether. Like in any path, you know, like the jnanis, the speculators, they use their mind, which is a material element. The yogis, they use pranayama. They're using air. Air is a material element. They do yoga asanas. They do bodily exercises. This is more or less a material activity. But even the bhaktas, those engaged in bhakti yoga, we also use the material elements with knowledge of who the proprietor is. And we use those elements and offer it back to the proprietor with love as an offering. In the Bhagavatam, the first canto, it explains this, that does not a thing applied therapeutically cure disease which is caused by that very same thing? And in the purport, Prabhupada says, an expert physician treats his patient with a therapeutic diet. For example, milk preparations sometimes cause disorder of the bowels, but the very same milk converted into curd and mixed with some other remedy cures some such disorders. So it's like if you stepped on a thorn, you could take another thorn to apply that thorn out of your foot. So it's like using the material energy to get out of the material energy altogether. And this is actually meditation. That's why when we distribute books, we say books on yoga and meditation. Because with this knowledge, it's giving us the intelligence to see reality for what it is. It's a constant meditation. First of all, seeing everything as Krishna's energy, but also in our line. As followers of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, the Rupa Nuga Sampradaya, as aspirants for Goloka Vrindavan, we can actually practice this vision even in the sadhana stage, that we are using external stimuli to actually enhance our internal absorption. And that's actually why the temples exist the way they do. The deities are there. It's not just some ritual. This is actually Radha and Krishna's pastimes are happening right now before our eyes. The deity is non-different from Krishna. So we are training to actually serve in the spiritual world. We dress the deities. We're training even in the sadhaka stage what they're doing in the spiritual world, what the pure devotees are doing. We're cooking for Krishna. We're cleaning Krishna's temple. You could be meditating that I'm actually, you know, if you're aspiring for some particular realm in the spiritual world, just for example, I'm cleaning, you know, the Vrindavan forest, or I'm up on the altar, and by the spiritual master's mercy, I'm engaging in confidential pastimes of Radha and Krishna by fanning them, by dressing and feeding them, by putting the flute to Krishna's mouth. So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. But he comes into this world to actually give us the example of what the ideal devotee will behave like, or what his vision will be. And there's quite a few examples where he had this vision that even though externally speaking he was somewhere, but in his mind he was somewhere else. He saw a hill, Chataka Parvat. He saw that as Govardhan Hill, and he actually ran after that hill in ecstasy. And during the pastimes of Rath Yatra, where he was the deity is taken from the temple to another place, he wasn't seeing that he was in Jagannath Puri, but rather as he was on the path, he saw that it was the path like a road in Vrindavan. He saw the gardens on the side of the road as different kunjas that Radha and Krishna have pastimes in Vrindavan. He saw the sand along the road that he was thinking that he was actually on the shore of the Yamuna River. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, there's at least one instance where he revealed that when he saw that the devotees were circumambulating Tulsi Devi, he didn't see their external body, but he was meditating how these are actually gopas and gopis that are circumambulating Tulsi, who is who in the spiritual world is Vrinda Devi. So there's also this understanding that These are kind of direct examples, but even indirect objects we can use as with our intelligence as a practice for our internal absorption. That's why ladies wear saris. That's what the gopis wear in the spiritual world. So instead of becoming disturbed by seeing women walking around this world, we could think that these are, you know, Krishna's associates. Obviously, we know that, okay, they're still conditioned souls, they have a material body, but this is just a practice for our own internal absorption. And Lord Chaitanya, actually, when he was in Jagannath Puri, inside the temple, Jagannath, who is Jagannath, he's the Lord and Master and Protector of the universe. So many devotees worship him with awe and reverence, but Lord Chaitanya was seeing him as two-armed form of Shyamasundar holding a flute. And Gopakumar in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when he was in Vaikuntha, he wasn't meditating that he was in Vaikuntha. He was seeing the Vaikuntha Vasis as Rajvasis, as associates of Radha and Krishna. So the external reality that we see before our eyes is very superficial. It's on the surface level. And just even materially speaking, if we got like a microscope and I went up to Prema Sankirtan and I looked at his skin, it would be a lot different than if I'm looking at him without a microscope. I would see different holes in the hairs, and it's a matter of vision, matter of perspective. But the advanced devotee even sometimes will have a diseased body. Nectar of Instruction advises us not to judge a devotee based on his external appearance, because we don't know how advanced that person is, actually. Just for example, like our very dear Jayapataka Swami, if someone was not a devotee and they saw him, they would just see it's a person in a wheelchair, and obviously he had some medical condition. But with a trained eye, we realize he's a very advanced devotee, eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya. And even a new bhakta, okay, he just joined a couple of days ago. What if he's been performing devotional service for 20 lifetimes? So just basing, if we rely solely on our senses to understand life, then we're just seeing the surface level. We're not really seeing the true reality. It's covered by Maya's curtain. But this is the reason why Prabhupada gave us such purports as today, is at least to theoretically at first realize that it is Maya's curtain. Most people don't even know that their reality is covered by the curtain of Maya. But at least we have Jnana Chakshusha. We should see the eyes through Shastra Chakshush, and realize that, at least theoretically, like I said in the beginning, understand that there's a whole world behind the curtain of Maya. It doesn't stop there. It should be that our knowledge, it doesn't stop theoretically. We should try to advance further and have realized knowledge. And this is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. That's why Krishna consciousness is the perfection of religion. Pratyaksha gavanam dharmyam sasukam kartam avigyam. This is the best religion. This is the best process of religion because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. So it's like sometimes Krishna, like okay, he opens the spiritual world like a book and then kind of closes it. So sometimes the devotees will have glimpses of some deep realization or some like epiphany. and these are Krishna's gifts. And just going back to what I was saying in the beginning, how Srila Prabhupada would often answer questions by saying, you go there and you find out yourself. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that in Jiva Dharma, he's talking about the spiritual master is instructing his disciple. The disciple is asking how the jiva, you know, comes into material existence in the first place. He's explaining, it's a whole chapter, it's very complicated. But at the end, the conclusion is that these subject matters are actually beyond the words and the mind to comprehend, the material mind to comprehend. But I suggest that you go, if you're curious, you go deep in your bhajan and you have Krishna reveal it to you. So that was actually the answer to that controversial question of, does the jiva fall? Does the jiva not fall? The conclusion is you find out, you have Krishna reveal it to yourself by your deep bhajan. So Krishna consciousness is not just book knowledge. It's actually meant for experience. And in the same book, Jiva Dharma, which is very beautiful, the spiritual master, I just read the exact thing. He's basically saying that these realizations, he's talking to his disciple, that by Krishna's mercy, sometimes Krishna will kind of reveal some amazing experiences or some deep epiphany, but you should keep these secret at all time. This is actually Krishna's gift to you, and this is like Krishna's relationship with every individual soul. Imagine you had a very dear friend that you confided in and you shared secrets to, and he went around and he told everybody. You probably wouldn't want to tell him your secrets anymore. So it's the same thing. Krishna will reveal amazing experiences, but that's between you and Krishna. And in the same way, later on, the disciple of Babaji Maharaj and Jiva Dharma, he had some very amazing experience of the spiritual world where Krishna revealed himself, and he was very excited about it, and he was thinking, tomorrow I'll go to my spiritual master and I'll tell him what happened. But then a few moments later he remembered, wait, I'm not supposed to tell anyone. I'm supposed to keep this secret within myself. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, when he was about to leave this world, he gave some last instructions to his disciples. And I'll just read it here. On December 23rd, 1936, His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur gave his final instructions to the assembled devotees. And he says, perhaps many people have considered me their enemy because I was compelled to tell the unadulterated truth. I ask them to serve the Lord with all sincerity. I have given much anxiety to many people only because I wanted to inspire them to serve Krishna sincerely without material desire and duplicity. One day they will understand this. And so there's a long list of instructions that he gave. The last instruction number 17, he tells his disciples to preach the message of Sri Rupa and Raghunath fearlessly and with great enthusiasm. Through this preaching, you will attain all perfection. And there's actually some more instructions that he gave, and this is in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. He says, I advise all to preach the teachings of Rupa and Raghunath with all energy and resources. Our ultimate goal shall be to become the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis. You should all work conjointly under the guidance of your spiritual master with a view to serve the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. You should live somehow or other without any quarrel in this mortal world, only for the service of Godhead. Do not, please, give up the service of Godhead in spite of all dangers, all criticisms, and all discomforts. Do not be disappointed, for most people in the world do not serve the personality of Godhead. Do not give up your own service, which is your everything and all. Neither reject the process of chanting and hearing of the transcendental holy name of Godhead. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance like a tree, and humbleness like a straw. There are many amongst you who are well qualified and able workers. We have no other desire whatsoever. And in his last days, he remained fully conscious and had given instructions until the end. He had specifically and openly ordered that the affairs of his Gaudiya Math be maintained by a 12-man governing body, which the devotees should select amongst themselves, Finally, he had said, "Please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. Please bear in mind that our sole duty in religion is to spread and propagate service to the Lord and His devotees." At 5:30 a.m. on January 1st, he breathed his last. The Acharyas are giving us access to have, to experience Krishna on a daily basis. And a really good friend of mine, Parma Karuna, he's a traveling book distributor. And he's from the Chicago Temple. He's originally from India. So I hope he doesn't mind if I tell his story a little bit because it's very inspiring. He came to America for material purposes. He was going to go to a university, become a pharmacist, and make money and support his family. He was coming to the ISKCON Temple because he was a devotee. He was more or less like a congregation member. He'd come on Sundays. He was chanting, but he was unsatisfied. He worked as a pharmacist. He married an American lady, had a daughter with her, and was sending money to his parents in India, I believe. One day he met a really good friend of mine, Madhavendra Puri Prabhu, and they became friends. And Parma Karuna asked him, "Prabhu, I'm chanting, I'm coming to the temple, I'm not doing anything sinful, but I don't have a taste. I'm not experiencing anything." And Madhavendra Puri said, "Of course, because you're not doing any service. Bhakti Mam Abhijananti, you can understand Krishna by devotional service." So he said something very radical, and I'm not propagating this, just saying what happened. Madhavendra Puri said, "If you're serious, you'll quit your job, you'll leave everything, you'll buy a Sankirtan van like Parameshwar, and you'll distribute books." And he actually did it, and he's been doing it for 10 years. And he has profound realization because of that. So I'm not saying that everyone has to do that, but the idea of giving everything to Krishna, even if you're in a household situation and you have a wife to maintain, okay, but give everything to Krishna. Become fully absorbed in the Sankirtan Yajna. Vaisheshika Prabhu quoted one Acharya, I forgot who it was, but he says that if you dive into the ocean of the Sankirtan movement, then you resurface in the pastimes of Goloka Vrindavan. So this is a very amazing opportunity for all of us. Hare Krishna, that's all I have to say for now. Is there any questions or comments regarding what I said? Yes.
Hare Krishna, before you take... Nice class, thank you. Before you take questions on today's verse, I just wanted to answer your question because it's very important about the Purusha avatars. Now, we've all studied Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter. Krishna says that the living entity is always existing. So where is there any question of the Purusha avatars not existing? Mm-hmm. Non-existence and non-manifestation are not incompatible. We experience that every day. The example I use all the time, this room right now is full of gases, one of which is totally essential, oxygen. But none of us can see it. It's not manifest to you. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Non-manifestation and non-existence are not incompatible, you see? So because Prabhupada says before the creation there was no Purusha avatar, doesn't mean they were not existing. It means they were not manifest. They're not manifest to us. Every living entity is always existing. So what to speak of the Purusha avatars? They're always existing. There's no question of them not existing. If every jiva exists eternally, how can the Purusha avatars not exist eternally? It's not possible. So they're always existing, but they're not manifest because they're not performing that role that they perform when the material world is manifest. The material world energy itself is considered to be eternal, as you know, but it's sometimes not manifest. It's compared to a cloud that comes in the sky sometimes and then disappears. But when it disappears, it's not existing. See, we it's hard for us to get that in our heads. But again, that oxygen example is very easy to relate to. Oxygen is essential. It's existing, but we can't see it. It's not manifest to us. So the Purusha avatars are always existing. There's no question of them not existing.
Thank you. Okay, anything else? No? Okay, Granth Raj, Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Hare Krishna.